Hello, October 28th, 1992. Begin. So anyway, tell me about your childhood and your upbringing and any influential family members that you may have had, either you.
Oh, well, I was going to tell you why I am what I am, or how I got this way.
Okay.
By giving a couple of significant incidents in my life. And one of them was at a very early age when I was probably in the first or second grade at school, and my young brother was born. And when I went to school, I was one of 13 children, and he was 13. And when I went to school, the kids very cruelly said, doesn't your mother know how to stop it, or something to that effect. And it made me, for a long time, actually into my adulthood, decide I wasn't going to get married, because at that stage, I thought that having children was the bad thing, and that the only way you could stop it was not getting married.
So you were pretty innocent about all
of
those issues.
Oh, very much so, because even with animals on the farm, we never, I found out about menstrual periods by running across a Kotex pamphlet that my mother had gotten that was in her dresser drawer. And I was rummaging for candy one day and found it. And so I read it. When I had my first period, I was living with my sister in Brookings, South Dakota, and my first year in high school, and I was so embarrassed because she put this in a letter home, and I knew all the family members would hear about it. So I was terribly embarrassed about that, but that's all I remember about that.
So your sister's never told you anything about reproduction?
No. I don't remember. My two older sisters were at the top of the family ladder, and then there were a bunch of brothers, and then there was me. So I was sort of like, I was a 10th in birth order, and there were a number of boys. So I was, in essence, the oldest girl of the second group of family members.
How many boys and girls were there?
There were, I had six brothers and four sisters. No, I had eight brothers and four sisters.
Yeah, that may be falling between a bunch of brothers.
Right. Difficult. So my playmate was always a brother just older than me. And my two older sisters sort of were together, and my two youngest sisters were together, and so I was sort of a loner.
Or you played with your brothers, did you? Did they call you tomboy?
No, although I was. Well, in our family, we wore cast-offs, and the next cast-off above me was their brother, and so I wore overalls a lot in those days.
Yeah. That was in the Dakotas,
right? Right. And now, of course, it's fun to wear overalls, but then it was patched and
I'm curious, how long did your mother live?
She died in 58.
She died in 58?
Yeah, she was mid-70s. She did pretty well considering her, because she lived on the farm. No, she lost two infants, two boys in infancy.
She had 15 altogether.
No. That's part of the total.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, there was 13, and now, although my oldest sister is still living, I'm sort of the matriarch of the family. I'm the one who is more literate. And I write more, and so I keep everybody sort of apprised of what's going on in the other spokes of the family, because they are definite branches.
Tell me about the aunt that you had that influenced
you. Oh, right. Well, as I said, I lived on the farm, and there was only a brother and a sister who went to high school before me, but they didn't finish. My sister got homesick, and my brother was very attached to her, so when she quit, he did. So I was the first one to break trail in high school. The rest of the family did go to high school. And it was when I was still probably late grade school that I had an aunt from Portland who was a nurse. And she came across country on a bus. And that was pretty big stuff in those days. And so, she was my mother's younger sister, and apparently she'd been married and divorced, I guess, and she had one son. And So her, I was going to be a nurse then. I don't know if it was because of her or whatever. And so she made a big impression on me. And then I think it was then that I decided in high school to go, but actually in high school I was going to go into journalism. But before
what influenced you from
I don't know why, the writing I guess or something, but before that I was going to be an airline stewardess.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you had to be a nurse in those days. And I had Bright's disease, kidney trouble. And so it automatically wiped me out as far as that was concerned. So my alternative then was journalism. And that, of course, knocked out the nursing, too, that I wanted to, like, take after my aunt. And I don't know why the journalism, but in any event, I did go to high school, and then I got sick. The Bright's disease came the year after I graduated from high school while I was waiting to be old enough to go to nursing school because I missed, I skipped a grade
mm-hmm.
in the lower grades. And so then I had to make another decision, so I decided to go to business college in Sioux Falls, which was about 60 miles from my place.
What year was
that? I graduated from high school in 39, so it must have been 41.
Right before the war.
Yeah.
Did the World War One or World War Two? Just reading about World War One. Did World War Two affect you going into that business school? Were you?
No, it was. This was before. This was before the war.
What about perhaps going into the war industries that they were crying for?
Well, I didn't back there. I took 6 months. I signed up for a 9-month course at Commercial College, and I got a job at the end of 6 months. And so then I got into insurance, and then I got into a county extension office.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to Morrell's for a while. And while there, I met a woman whose boyfriend was stationed at Santa Ana Air mm-hmm. Base. And she was going to come out here, but her folks didn't want her to come alone. And so she talked me into coming with her. So that's how I got to California. And that's then how I got into the war industry. And the first thing we did when we got here, we got a job at Douglas Aircraft Graveyard Shift from 12 till 7. 6.5 hours paid for 8 hours plus a six cents an hour bonus.
So World War II did kind of definitely have an effect on your life by bringing you to California.
Oh, it made a major difference because when I got to California, then after I'd been here for about a year or so, I found out about the free community colleges in California.
Which they're not. They weren't free anyplace else.
They were, they didn't even have them in South Dakota. So, is this bothering because I can move them? All right, at Douglas Aircraft, we... Debbie and I started nights, and it was great because then we were able to get around and see everything during the day.
Mm-hmm.
But we landed in Fullerton, so we were way out, you know, as far, there was only one bus out of Fullerton in those days, but we didn't have any problem getting to a ride to Long Beach, Douglas, because mm-hmm. there was all kinds of organized ride sharing and everything in those days. And those are just bean fields out there in Lakewood. Yeah, right. So, and there were still orange processing plants in Fullerton. And when we came out at 11 o'clock to get our ride, you could smell the orange. Oh, it was just marvelous. But anyhow, we first worked in the medical department, I think. And then Evie got homesick. Oh, Gordon, her boyfriend, got sent to someplace else, Stevens Point, Wisconsin. And so I was left alone, which was fine. I was not going back to South Dakota. Mm-hmm. She was homesick, so she went back home. And I liked it out here, so I stayed here. And
where did you live? You were still in Fullerton?
Well, we were living in Fullerton then, but after she left, I moved in with somebody over in somewhere in this area. I can't remember now, because I moved 10 times in that period.
Did you usually live with people that you worked with?
This was a high school roommate I moved in with first, and then through the job they connected me with somebody else because they also planned housing, mm-hmm. so you didn't have any problem with that. And by then I had gone back home and gotten a car and brought it out here, and so I just put my stuff in a car. I can never do it now, you know, and just take off for another place whenever I felt like moving. But then I worked in several departments at Douglas. I was in personnel and material, but I enjoyed medical. That was
really. Did they shift you around, or did you choose?
It was by my choice, yeah. And partly too because of the places that I moved to. I worked in Douglas El Segundo and Douglas Long Beach, yeah. And I shifted back and forth a couple of times. And I was over in that medical department later too, and ran across. That was days, and it was just a wonderful bunch of people that I connected with then.
Did I'm just curious if Douglas, they pretty much treat their employees pretty good at that time.
I really thought it was great.
Yeah.
But then I thought that, you know, getting out of the house was so wonderful. That, I mean, to me, it was just a marvelous adventure because I didn't know anything else. And, you know, there was no television in those days, so you had no idea what anything else was like.
So you just, you know,
I was
going
just very naive,
green
at the gourd, yes. So I developed friends along the way, and then
now you worked in the medical. You worked in the medical offices. What kind of work did you do?
Well, at first I was in files, and then when I was over at El Segundo, I was a sonographer and took dictation from the dermatologist and from the orthopedic specialist, and you know, things like that, and typed them up and that sort of thing. So. And they've been having trouble finding someone, so I was everybody's darling because I was the only one who could get the words right because I had a natural feel for words, yeah. So that was neat. But anyhow, I enjoyed that. And then...
did you stay there for a while?
Yeah. And then one of the women there introduced me to a friend of hers whose husband was overseas, and she had a small child who needed a tenant. And so I moved in with her and over by the Helms Bakery, going to work in the morning. Mm-hmm. So I got used to smells wherever I went in California. The smells were great. And so then, where did I go from there? Then I heard about community colleges. And I came back to Compton, which was, did I show you that yearbook? Oh, I had my Compton yearbook around here someplace. The thing that's neat is there's only one or two blacks in it. This was in about 45 or 46 that I graduated. But that was, you know, it was a community college, so it was just 2 years. But I will have to admit that I had saved money, and I was going to go to USC. And I went over there, and I still was very green, and I went over there to register, and the registration procedure was so confusing that I came back home and signed up for another semester at Compton, even though I graduated.
It hasn't gotten but I did better.
Yeah. So anyhow, and then in the process, I was working for Douglas El Segundo, and it was then I met my husband to be. A friend of mine who I worked with at Douglas Long Beach had married a friend of his who'd worked at Dollarback Paper, and they thought it was terrible for us to be so single when they were so married. So they got us together, and then they got a divorce. So anyhow.
That's strange.
So anyhow, so I was, you know, then I took time out from going to school then, and I took on all of the businesses of being, and I wasn't going to get married. I was a virgin. I was married at 25. I was a virgin on my wedding night, and that's an interesting, but I won't go into it.
Were you taking journalism in junior college? Or
yeah, what? I did. I had, yes. I was still interested in being a journalist, and one of the things that really, really helped me very much then was a course in public speaking. Just gave me a lot of confidence, and the woman who was there was just really, she was a tyrant, but she was great, and that was a big, significant step in my going forward. And then we were living here, my husband and I, and then I got pregnant almost immediately thanks to the diaphragm, and then
did you quit school?
I wasn't in school then. I'd finished. I'd gotten the AA and had taken one more semester. And then it was during this time that I met my husband, to be. So then he talked me. I wasn't going to get married. I swore I wasn't going to get married. And he proposed on our second date. And I said, no, but I went back to the Midwest then, and I actually went back to buy another car, and when I, on the way back, I took my mother to Portland on the way down here, and my brother lives up there, and all the way, I could hardly wait to get back down here to tell him, and I had to propose to him. He didn't believe it. So, I mean, I just, you know, I just fell in love with him, just head over heels, and I wasn't going to, but I did. I was going to be a career woman, and I thought those were, you know,
Did you talk to anybody about these ideas about being a career woman? I mean, did anybody in your family, did you ever talk to, you know, friends?
My family knew that I was going to be, knew that I wasn't planning to get married.
Yeah. Did they give you a hard time about it?
No. As a matter of fact, I gave my mother a hard time, I think, when I was a teenager, and she helped me because it would have been very difficult, I think, if it hadn't been for her help. She, I don't know whether it was butter and egg money or what, that helped me to go to business college.
Hmm.
And so
she must have seen something in you that she knew.
Well, she just wanted to get rid of me. She just wanted to get me out of the house.
Yeah, but she probably, you know, you
so
the one
well, I had good grades.
Yeah.
And I read a lot. And that was very unusual for members earlier in my family, preceding or whatever. I can't think of the word.
Did they have a farm back there?
Oh, we lived on the farm, yeah.
Yeah, so did most of your older brothers and sisters go into farming, or did they leave the farm and go into the town? Or?
Well, what's interesting is they didn't. Not very many of them. A couple of them became hired hands, working for $30 a month in Found. Do you know what Found is?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's room and board.
Mm-hmm.
And then my two oldest sisters got married and left home. And then the next brother in line, there were three brothers. The next brother in line, we helped him. I don't know how he managed that. But he went out to Portland, out where my aunt was, and they were rather close, and went to a trade school for tractor maintenance. You know, the Peterbilt tractors and trucks. And so that was his career. And then my next two brothers, it was time for the war, and one went in the Army and the other went in the Navy. And my youngest brother missed it altogether.
Yeah.
So, and I wanted to get in the waves, and I was 4F because of the kidney trouble. And then I had a heart murmur.
So you couldn't become an airline steward.
Right, and I couldn't get in the waves for the same reason. Yeah.
I can't believe you had to be a nurse to be an airline steward.
In those days, yeah, you did.
Would you go, would that have been a commercial airline steward?
Yeah.
Or military?
No, commercial.
Wow.
Yeah, and my husband always said, I could never have put up with being in the military because I couldn't take orders.
Well, so that's funny, Vi, because when I was 18, I almost did the same. I almost joined the Navy. I went and took all the testing on it.
Oh, I wanted to.
My name, you know, and then me and my girlfriend both did it. And
that was
chickened out.
It was a very big disappointment for me. Just really an enormous disappointment for me.
And so this would have been in 72 for us in the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
Still going on.
Yeah.
I don't know what made us even think of it. But
I thought in the waves. And when we were at Douglas Aircraft, Evie had two friends who were in the Tip Toppers Club. And they were in, they were glider pilots.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was very exciting. And I met a couple of other women who were in the service. And so it was.
Were there women working at Douglas that had been in the service and gotten out?
No, because this would be going into the service. Or went into the service from there.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
yeah.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, because that was in, I started Douglas, I think, in 43.
How long did you work there all together? Did you go back?
I married Ed in 47, and I worked there until I married him. I hadn't thought of that before, but that's true.
Yeah. And then, so you stopped working, and you were done with college. You were done with
school. No, I didn't stop working. I was living, at that time, I was living I can't think of the number, names are evading me now, over the town north of the Crenshaw District. Not Torrance, no. But anyhow, one of those towns over there. And I moved in I came down here and moved in with Ed, and then he worked in East L.A., so I got a job in East L.A. and went to work with him. Mm-hmm. So I went into Vans Markets, mm-hmm. not Bonds, Vans.
Vans?
Uh-huh.
Never heard of them.
Well, they were taken over by Arden Dairies, which is no longer either, I don't think.
Heard of Arden Dairies.
Yeah, and so, Vans was taken over by, I'll tell you later, can't think of it right now. But it's been swallowed up years ago. But it was an interesting experience. And then I worked there until my one claim to fame is that I can be pregnant without being obvious.
So you worked at
and boxy jackets were very helpful at that time. And I worked there until the day before my baby was born. And nobody knew I was pregnant.
I guess you could conceal it.
I carried him straight up and down. I carried him straight up and down. Well, actually, what had happened is I had a thyroid condition, and the doctor, I was with some Ross Luce, mm-hmm. and the doctor misdiagnosed my case. He said it was a thyroid condition when, in fact, I was pregnant.
And you do gain weight with a thyroid.
Yeah.
Weight.
So anyhow, I didn't
know. Were they surprised
know.
You left work that afternoon?
Well, I was surprised. I found out I was really pregnant. I was really surprised when I was, well, when Ed called in the next morning, because the baby was born before, you know, before he went to work, and he called in and said I wouldn't be in because I just had a baby, and they couldn't believe it. They thought, well, now that's really an excuse to really top him.
Oh, God. But they didn't have a policy that you are
aware
of. No. You couldn't work until you were late, or you couldn't even work if you were pregnant.
That never. And then after that, I got a job. Where did I work? Whalen Drug
mm-hmm.
in East L.A. And then we stayed there until Scott was born here then in June of 48. And then Carlin was due in February 51. So in 1950, we wanted to get out because Ed's mother would come out here and spend the winters, and we were really crowding her, although mm-hmm. she really loved that little grandson of hers.
And where was his mother from? Where did she come out here from?
Oh, North Dakota.
Okay. Oh, he was from Dakotas too?
Yeah, he was from the north, I was from the south. We met out here.
That's
funny
how that happened.
So anyhow, we had to get a place, and we wanted to go up in the foothills. Well, we had to because Scott had asthma, and the doctor said, you know, get away from the water and up to the foothills. So we looked around in Arcadia and all those places and finally found a house in El Sabina.
Mm-hmm.
And we saved about $5,000 then between us. Well, I'd sold my car for $1,000, which I'd paid for it the year before for $1,000, so I broke even on it. And it was a neat little... not a Model A, but what followed that in the Fords?
Not the Model T. You know, it was the Model A.
But anyhow, it was really it was just a really neat car. And I hated to give it up. But anyhow, I was very practical, and it had to go because we were going to buy it. So, and we got a house for $10,000, although we found out later we shouldn't have offered more than $8,500 for it. Mm-hmm. But it was a nice place.
This was on the other side of Pasadena. Altadena?
East of.
In the foothills.
No, we bought it. Did I say Altadena? It's Sierra Madre.
Mm-hmm.
That's east of, yeah. And then we stayed there for a while, and then we moved just down the hill two blocks mm-hmm. over across the street into Pasadena. And then we lived there until the kids were in high school, and then we moved up to Altadena before I moved back here alone. So anyhow...
So when you got down to Pasadena and your children had gone into school by this time, you know,
after
you moved to Pasadena, the kids were in elementary school there and went through high school.
Yeah.
Did you get involved with anything?
My first community involvement was organizing getting rid of trick or treat for Halloween, because I'd been to the dentist and he had said that you know, we were remarking about all the cavities and stuff that come from all that junk. And so somebody had given me some information on UNICEF, mm-hmm. trick or treat for UNICEF. And so I tried to organize the community, and really they said I was a communist because it was UNICEF, you know, the whole business. But because of that, Sierra Madre now has community Halloween parties every
mm-hmm.
year.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that was my first. And my daughter was probably about 5 then. So that was my first.
I've heard of them for the treating for UNICEF now.
And then I got involved in church activities I hadn't been before, and I became a church school superintendent, among other things.
What denomination?
Congregational.
Yeah.
And they had a very nice group of people up there. And then I got involved with the coordinating council and a couple of other community activities. And then I got so involved that somebody asked me, they said, when do you ever see your family? Because I was out. I really was just loving it. I'd never done this before. I had had no experience with this before. And I was just out almost every night and just loving every minute of it. It wasn't that I didn't love my kids and my husband, but to be able to get out, because I've been home all day, then I was staying home with the kids. Mm-hmm. But to be able to get out and, you know, and be an organizer and be involved with people, it was just really just...
Was it generally fundraising, a lot of fundraising?
Well, we weren't doing so much fundraising then. It was sort of doing things for the kids, you know, like the Girl Scouts and the mm-hmm. Boy Scouts and community activities. And then I got involved in politics a little bit. As a matter of fact, I'd been in the hospital. I came home and somebody came and took me to vote in a wheelchair. So, and I was written up in the local paper because of my patriotism.
And today, people do that all the time. You know,
so anyhow, yeah, but as soon as I found out about these things, mm-hmm. I just loved them. And I really, I did the housework and all that sort of thing, but we never had much money.
Was your husband pretty cooperative? I mean, he
think he was very proud of my activism, although he wasn't like that. He was very, very retiring, very shy.
Did he work just like regular 9 to 5 hours?
Yeah, at Dollar Bag Paper, and it took him an hour to come and go to work, an hour each way. Mm-hmm. And so, he was pretty tired by the time he got home. But he was really great with the kids. They, you know, like he'd read to them at night and put them to bed and everything. And so, in a way, I was doing them a favor because it gave them a chance to see more of their father.
Yeah.
But I feel, yeah. No, he was really great. He was a feminist before I was.
You were lucky to find somebody.
Yeah, he was a feminist. Well, I felt badly about it because I really didn't feel that it was right for a man to be doing housework and stuff like that.
That it was not as much that it wasn't right for him to do it, but you were feeling guilty because you weren't doing it, as opposed to it not being right for him.
Well,
to do it.
I don't know. I think in a way I was thinking in terms of what men did and what women did. And in those days, it wasn't until I read Betty Friedan that I really realized what had been bothering me all this time. Mm-hmm. My mother-in-law used to save all these women's magazines and stuff for me, and only because it gave me, because we couldn't afford to buy them.
Mm-hmm.
And, every time I'd read those things about what a woman was supposed to do and how she was supposed to keep the marriage going and all that sort of thing, I would just get so... And I think, in a way, I may have taken some of that out on my husband.
So that was like in the 50s and stuff.
Yeah,
The domestication of women was real big after World War II. Yeah. They expected you to stay home. So what about other mothers at the school or other mothers?
I was very involved with our church group. It was called the Phoebes. It was a young women's group.
Mm-hmm.
And Phoebes were the working women of, she was a worker at her time in the Bible. It was a biblical woman. And so we did all kinds of good deeds, like we would redo the nursery at church and the kindergarten and get the fellows to help us and my husband would come down and help on Saturdays at nursery school,
mm-hmm.
which was not with the church. This was a community endeavor. Things like that, so that we had a typical, it was sort of a typical middle class thing, except we were very low class as far as finances, except my mother-in-law did have some money. I found out later she didn't have as much as I thought she had, but it was a lot compared to what we had. And she used to buy my husband a new car every other or every third year. Because driving to work was such a hassle.
That's a long commute.
Yeah, and so she would buy him a new car every...
That's a long commute for them, because
and she had
the freeways weren't even.
No, there weren't. Well, no, and he drove up a surface streets all the way to East LA.
Oh, no wonder it took him so long.
Oh yeah.
Wow. He must have been driving freeways.
Oh no, he didn't like the freeways.
No.
He liked to drive, and so I don't think he minded it too much.
That's a long drive, even on the freeway. That's a long drive. The surface streets, that would have taken forever.
So.